The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Host Rob Sessant. No, not doing it. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, here to discuss episode six, week five. This is off to a great start of Survival Winners at War. We saw the fall of the Godfather. Boston Rob finally taken out of the game, going to Edge of Extinction for what I really feel is like a party in his honor with his wife there and a couple of very good friends. And they've just been waiting for him, and he has finally arrived a little bit fashionably late to the Edge. And to talk about all of that, I have my very own Stephen Fishback. It's not actually Stephen, but it is someone I love to chat about Survivor with, the great Rick Devins. Rick, how are you?
I'm like the JV team, Stephen Fishback. I'm so happy to be here, Shannon.
If you're JV team, Stephen, what am I to Rob? I'm like below those leagues.
you're like right there. You're international Rob. You're Rob with an accent.
Imagine.
If I couldn't be with my friend Josh Wiggler celebrating his birthday right now, this is number two place in the world I want to be. It's right here talking with you about Survivor, Shannon.
Thank you. Well, I did wish for Josh for his birthday, a great episode of Winners at War. And it was that, you know, it always is. And even though it was a straightforward vote, we got interesting tribe dynamics on every single tribe, I think, We were so privileged to see. We got the fall of Rob, whose legacy in the season I want to talk about, because while it was a pre-merge legacy so far, at least, it was a huge game. And for me, kind of only built on what we've seen of Boston Rob, which is in itself a high bar. So a lot to talk about tonight. I guess Rob would plug things, but I'm not Rob, so we can just dive straight into it.
I love it. I told you before we came on, you're the pilot, I'm the passenger, and I'm just excited to dive into it. You say interesting tribe dynamics. I mean, we can even put a little interesting tribe dynamics with some of these tribes, but I'll let you lead the way here. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about this new
I'm
tribe.
I'm excited for us to just kind of kick it, Shannon.
Yes. Oh, my God. I didn't realize we were watching X on the Beach. I've never actually watched X on the Beach, but it seems like a very entertaining and interesting show from the 5 minutes of it I got tonight, everyone, I guess, is as compelling as Michelle and Wendell. But the Yara tribe, I don't know if I'm saying it right, is the new green tribe. Rick, PTSD, surely, for you, picking that new green buff in the three-tribe swap.
Absolutely. Everything about the new Yara tribe is just like on my season, Lesu, which got the green
buff. He said Lesu was more. He even said that.
We did. We also said Lesu is the perfect name for us because we had to build our shelter from scratch, and we went on to lose and lose and lose. So Yara in every way was the new Lesu. That green buff might become a thing of Survivor lore.
Can you believe, though, that it was these three old Cele members together? Like, if you could find three more disparate Cele members, I'd like to see it. You know, Rob, obviously, as they so eloquently put it, it's like Ben had blindsided Rob, who blindsided Adam. Ben had also blindsided Adam. We had seen Ben say that he, like, actively dislikes Rob as well. So in terms of, like, zero connective tissue, this was, like, the most combustible group that we could probably have got.
No, absolutely amazing. And all of them this season have had their standout moments of just like, what are you doing out there? So to get them all together in a situation where they might have had to depend on each other was just beautiful. And I loved Ben narrating it from the middle between a guy who didn't want to be with either of these guys. It was beautiful.
Did you think there was a chance that Adam and Ben would go with Rob? I mean, even if they were going to, it did seem like they were going to lose to an idol or a vote still. But did you think that the votes could have come out that way?
I did think that it could have come out that way. Rob has just been going against the grain of new school play all season. I know we'll get into that later, but it's been working for him up to this point. And so it was just a matter of how long he kept them in camp. Although I did love that it's like if Rob's in an interview talking about how no one's allowed away from camp, he's away from camp. And you just wonder who's back at camp talking. So that buddy system on steroids only goes so far. But I was a little surprised that both guys got on the same page. But I think, especially in all winter season, you can only be dictated to for so long. What did you think? Did it surprise you?
Well, you'll know that the buddy system is like at full force when Boston Rob is doing his confessionals and you just see the rest of the tribe just like cowering in the corner. That's the point we need to get to. I'm surprised
he's walking behind him like the chickens on my season.
Well, he's been in production. I'm surprised he couldn't bully production to be like, do my confessionals in camp. I am not leaving. Yeah. But I guess Boston Rob has to be dictated to by production sometimes. But I enjoyed this because I think there was legitimate, you know, merit to either case. Like if Ben and Adam want to go with Rob, I see that. They'd be assuring themselves you think the merge. You would assume based on just like precedent that they're going to merge the episode after next. So if there are three, they vote out Sarah, they have Sophie next time, even if they lose. Now we've seen two tribes will go to tribal council. They have assured themselves the merge. So the fact that there's a lot of credibility to that argument makes it really interesting because they could rationally go either way. Obviously, the way that they did go, also a very logical move to take out Boston Rob, who they haven't really jived with, clearly, who is playing the way that he is. Obviously, there's just not as much like social connection there. And he is Boston Rob. He is such a big threat. So that makes sense as well. I was interested in the fact that it was such a even choice, kind of like last week where it was like taking out Tyson's a big threat, makes sense, keep the tribe cohesive, but also, you know, keeping the big threats in makes sense. I like when there's these two very logical choices. So it could go either way because it would make sense to go either way.
Absolutely. And I think what surprised me more than the guys flipping and getting out Rob was that Sarah and Sophie both felt so comfortable that the guys were going to flip that neither of them used their advantage. I thought, you know, that steal a vote is so often not that powerful, but in this situation, it's just the most powerful thing you could have. And I thought perfect situation, guarantee that you're okay. I thought that they would use that, but apparently they got something off Adam and or Ben that made them feel comfortable enough to just ride it out.
Well, Ben and Adam, like either way, are going to tell them what they want to hear. So that is such a credit to both Sophie and Sarah's read that they got this right. And I've got to say, as someone who has kind of like poo-pooed the vote steal and definitely the extra vote, but the vote steal as well is kind of a useless, very situational advantage. I did have my eyes open to it a couple of weeks ago. I got a DM from Jake Arms, I think it was, and he said, we've never seen the vote steal so early. We usually see it post-merge in these big tribes. And here it's come pre-swap in what will pretty obviously predictably be a swap to three tribes to small tribes where it will have a lot of meaning. Yeah. And I do think that something like this, obviously they had cracks anyway, but in another world, the vote steal here is game breaking, is a very big deal. So now I'm on board with vote steals and as being impactful as long as they are pre-swap, because these five-person tribes, as they've said, there's no room to hide.
In the world of Lasso, it would have changed everything for David and I. If we had had that, we absolutely would have used it.
Like you want to get further and further into the game because then they have more power. The fewer numbers there are, well, you lose all your numbers when you're going to three tribes of five, and then it becomes actually very impactful. So I'm now, my eyes are open to the impact that vote steals can have, just not in these 13 person merges, more in like, you know, 5 person tribes.
And like you said, it's situational, but this was definitely a situation where it could have been huge for sure.
Yeah, so I have to credit, you know, Sophie and Sarah for knowing the read. Okay, so we got to go one way or the other. This is the gut takes of know-it-alls. Right or wrong move for Ben and Adam?
I think it was the right move. I think just the further down the line they got, the more they would not be able to just be dictated to by Rob. I don't think it would ever happen. Whereas I think one of them, at least, will be able to find a way to work themselves in with Sophie and Sarah a little bit. What do you think?
I think it must be the right move, as you said, for one of them. I just don't know who that one is because we haven't been given a lot of intel of like, are they both reading that they're the third? Because then one of them is wrong. And the one that's reading it wrong or is just going by on like a hope and a prayer, that person's probably made the wrong move. That person's probably at the bottom of my power rankings going into, you know, a two tribal council week next week where they have four members. The other tribes are sitting someone out, which obviously does very much change the balance of the challenges. So whether it's Adam or Ben, and I don't have a real indication, my gut would say Adam is the third, but one of them is a little bit screwed.
If I remember correctly, and this is fun by editing, they showed us Ben with Sarah. And they showed us Adam with Sophie. Neither of them crossed over. So it's like, are Sophie and Sarah going to be on the same page about who it is? I think this could be a lot of fun. This tribe, if they lost a big competitor in Rob, despite his up and down season. So if they keep losing the way Alessu did, I think they're going to be a lot of fun to watch, even without having an X on the beat.
Yeah. All the tribes are fun because the cast is so perfect.
True. But
maybe there isn't an exact third right now. You know, maybe Sophie and Sarah literally just don't know who that third is. So you can't say for one of them that it's the wrong move, but it's a two-part move. The move is now you've taken out Rob, and the move next week is become that third and ingratiate yourself to Sarah and Sophie and make yourself indispensable in some way. And then it's the right move. Then you've made new social connections, you've taken out a huge threat, and you've gotten yourself through to merge. But for the person who can't stick the landing and pull that off next week, they're probably going home. So it's a good long-term move, but the short-term is dicey for one of them.
Oh, and one more thing while we're in Yara, I want to give my buddy David Wright a hard time because it seems like he's the only person in these half an idol scenarios who withholds his half of the idol.
Yeah, even if he gave it right back.
My best buddy David held out on me.
There is an etiquette to this that clearly David didn't. That was a weird situation.
I think David's playing it actually smarter than these guys. These guys, here, go ahead. They might get it used against them. That's what David was worried about, I think.
Well, you know, Sarah and Sophie, they need to be tight. Adam and Denise at the time were their closest allies. I think the one that's weird is Kim and Sophie. But I think what we saw now really like personified by Yara is the different ways that Sele and Dekal have been playing. Like Sele have been fractured. They've been ruled by the Godfather. They've been dumping their bags at Tribal. They've had 4-3-1 votes. It's been crazy. Whereas just with one fewer vote on Dekal, that's been the fun tribe. Every secret scene of them having fun. The culture has just been one of like frivolity. And I think that Sophie and Sarah were a little shocked that it was so fractured and so negative, as they said, when that culture's kind of, those cultures did kind of clash coming into Yara, and Ross and Rob certainly brought it over. So for Sophie and Kim, even if they're not in express alliances together, there wasn't enough discord kind of there, probably in Dekal, to be keeping an idol. That would be like the most negativity that tribe had.
Well, and Survivor is, you know, a game of metaphors. And I don't think there could be a more perfect metaphor than those two original tribes. And as we saw tonight, their camps. Wendell's, like, beautiful paradise camp and the other one that was generously called a fixer-upper. It's just like, it's so perfect.
Yeah, I want to talk about Boss and Rob, the man of the hour, the guest of honor at Edge of Extinction, because I found his game so fascinating, and I have compared it in the past to Sandra in Game Changers, which is like, at the time I was like, I'm sure he'll be pre-merge, which he at the moment he is. Mm-hmm. Sandra was pre-merge in Game Changers, but for me it was her most impressive showing, and it just added to her wins for me, whereas, I mean, very high bar to say this is Boston Rob's best showing compared to one of the best winning games of all time at Redemption Island. But I do think even though he's gone through a lot in this game and he is out pre-merge, for me, it did build on that legacy for him.
Totally. It's amazing sitting back and watching it. I think every week after every episode you went, why didn't they get rid of Rob? Like, why are they going after Rob? And it's clearly what he does out there. And he just plays fearlessly. Like you saw so many people coming in, even Tony this season, Ben, so many of them adjusting their game, trying to sit back. And Rob just didn't do that at all. He was full steam ahead. And it was just so much fun to watch. And just when you thought he might sit back, he'd go one step further. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah, and Rob has vocalized a lot of the old school, new school stuff. I mean, he had a confessional this episode, bring it all the way back to season 4 in Marquesas when I was like under 10 years old. That's how far the history goes. And even in his most recent playtime, as he I think he really verbalized it so well. They're like, you found an idol, like you're new school too. He's like, I found it after 4 clues. That's a very different game to the fact that Sophie can find it, you know, getting there on day, you know, 1 of Yara without any clues. So I think he's really verbalized very interestingly the difference between not just old school and new school, but the fact that like early 20s is kind of old school at this point. And he even had like a very funny line a few episodes ago, like these new school players, they don't even talk, they don't even make relationships, which probably not super true, but he's been the one kind of verbalizing that. So I wouldn't have been surprised from an edit perspective had it been an idol advantage to take him out, because it kind of felt like it was leading to that. But ironically, and maybe more poetically, it was those old school by three new school players and Sophie, who I guess is old school at this point, but it was those old school tactics of just strategy and social relationships and integration and a swap that did take him out. And I think that's almost more poetic because that's Boston Rob's game.
Yeah. And it is funny because I thought it was going to be an idol for that same reason that he had mentioned, you know, we didn't have idols like this before. And it's like, well, that's why the buddy system worked before, you know, idols blow up the buddy system. That's how the odd person out can make it further in the game, that and winning immunities. But then it was also with Rob, as we went on, you know, interesting because he won his season by just controlling these people. And everyone was, you look back and you go, why did they keep going? Why did they keep going? But this is a season of all winners. And it's like he was trying to control these people the same way. And you just knew it wasn't going to work. I'm surprised it lasted this long. But, you know, it's just these are not the people you worked with on Redemption Island that you could tell not to go anywhere. And I think they finally got tired of playing that role tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Boston Rob has been playing on the bottom for probably longer than it's been perceived. From the instant that the old school, new school alliance was the driving narrative and strategy of the tribe, and there were four old schoolers in nine, he has been on the bottom. And I think almost his game has been so impressive in spite of his lack of control, because like he wouldn't have chosen for Danny to go home. Obviously he had no control on the Ethan vote. I don't know what would have happened if Saleh had gone back to tribal council, and here he's just fighting for control and he had none of it. On the other tribe, he has no control as they vote out his wife and his best friend. So he's been trying to control an uncontrollable situation based on just like circumstance and how good these other players are and his own reputation. And I don't believe he has had control, but what I am impressed with is just seeing those Boston Rob tactics come out so aggressively, maybe as a product of him being on the bottom, but just last week to say him, see him say to Adam, it doesn't matter what you say to me, because I'll just spread lies and they won't know the truth. And to see it be seemingly, I mean, we never got to a vote, so we don't know, but it was seemingly quite effective. And today it didn't work out, but to try and force the buddy system, it was a Hail Mary pass that didn't work, could have worked. I still really like the move. I just think that Boston Rob, he wasn't swap screwed. It wasn't a great swap, but he's been contending with a ton in the first few episodes of this game. And I'm just impressed that he was able to survive it, as you said, for as long as he did.
Yeah. And again, just fearless play. Everything you mentioned, fearless, stepping up on like every puzzle and everything. Yeah. I guess he wasn't
until this one
tonight. Yeah. Interestingly enough. And was this, was this the famous like Spencer puzzle that,
that
everyone kind of practices outside the game? I think we had like three people on our season that claimed they could have done this puzzle in like 4 seconds because they actually cut out the cubes. So I was expecting one of the tribes to come in and do that. It did look like two of the tribes had it down pretty quick.
Spencer has practiced a lot. I know he's done the 5-piece puzzle in a few seconds. I don't know if this was one of them, but it is a puzzle they've used multiple times. You would think that, you know, someone would have maybe kind of got it down pat. But you know,
I know David Wright and Ron both had them 3D printed on our season. So they I mean, those guys are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. The 3D printing is basically a must now when they keep reusing these puzzles. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy to see the fall of the Godfather this way. Just to see him there with Ben, who's been the one person to actually negatively say things about him confessional. Adam, who he's like openly chastising and like threatening to his face last week, which again, like that's on him. Maybe there's a reason you don't play like that, but it could have been effective had they not swapped. And then Sarah and Sophie, who have probably been at the forefront of voting out, you know, obviously Sarah had a relationship with Tyson, but they have also voted out his wife and best friend. So he doesn't even maybe have those connections to go to someone from Dekal and be like Adam and Ben did and be like, come with me. There was just so many like barriers for him to have allies, some of which was his fault and some of just, you know, that was the position that he was in.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an uphill battle and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with him on the edge. I can't wait to see that group on the edge. I don't think Tyson's going to want an alpha around. It's going to be really interesting.
I just can't believe
Tyson's ready to do something sneaky and hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is crazy to see, you know, we're finally going to get Rob and Amber on the same beach. Have been waiting for it. It's unfortunate that it came this way, but I think probably inevitable. I think we probably all would have bet that the first time Rob and Amber meet up in the game would be at Edge before the season. So that's going to be very interesting. You've got Rob, you've got Tyson, his best friend. You've got Amber and her ex-boyfriend. It's just, it's a party over there.
Danny and Natalie just trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And Danny still has hard feelings. No, she doesn't have hard feelings. Yeah, she does have hard feelings with Rob. So that'll be interesting. Amber has to mediate there.
Yeah, maybe get our Reem moment next week. I enjoyed Edge last week. I didn't miss it this week. There was so much going on with three tribes. I do like it's so hard to fit it in next week. If there's going to be two tribal councils, three tribes, and Edge, are we going back next week again?
I tweeted this out, but it was literally like 8:40, and I had not even thought about Edge of Extinction. It hadn't crossed my mind.
It
wasn't there. Yeah. And I mean, I really enjoyed last week, especially the Ethan storyline. I agree. It was long, but this week I was so into this episode. I was loving it. And I got to admit, like, I'll be happy to see them next week because absence makes the heart grow fonder, but I did not miss the Edge of Extinction this week, especially with the swap. There were just so many things going on.
We haven't even gotten
the window of Michelle, so
yeah, we'll have to get there. I do want to talk about that tribe, which my notes are telling me is the Sele tribe. Before we get there, is there anything more just on Boston Rob? I do think like something like playing from the front, which Boston Rob has to do. You have to play as the person you are, and like he's not hiding anywhere. They completely know who he is, but it is kind of almost like an Andrew Savage type game, but played better. Where if you do get into an unfortunate position with the numbers, if you do, you know, if there is an idol coming out, if there is, he even said it, if there's an idol coming, he knows it's coming back on him, but that's his only play. And unfortunately that is the risk you take when you play from the front, which someone like Boston Rob absolutely has to do. There's no other option for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this season just cements his legacy to me. I mean, he came back and he didn't adapt in the way that some of these other players are trying to, like a Tony, but he was just classic Boston Rob, and it worked so much better than any of us at home expected it to, I think. And he was just such a huge character, and you just, how can you argue, at least at this point in the season, that his head should be up there with Sandra's? I mean, he's just great. I love Boston Rob.
Yeah. And I think some people don't credit that he made it that long. They're like, oh, you know, they're going to keep Boston Rob around. He could have been, maybe should have been the first boot on that tribe. For him to go and make the connection with Parvati, who could have been coming after him, is really impressive. Every single week that he stayed in is a credit to him. If they were keeping him in for Jeremy's individual connection with him, for his prowess and challenges, for just pure intimidation, for what he offered as a shield, whatever it was, he was giving that to them. And that is a complete and utter credit to him. But, you know, at the same time, you know, maybe if the numbers work out differently on a swap, it goes better. But I do think it was kind of like, it was running out of time, I think, for Boston Rob's game. But I will say too, you say he didn't adapt. So much is his power that I feel like he didn't adapt. He still played the Boston Rob game, albeit more on the bottom. And we maybe saw those aggressive tactics even more forcefully because he was fighting from the bottom.
They lost so much. I mean, if they had lost half as much.
Yeah. I mean,
he made the merge.
Yeah. He and Adam and Venom have had a hard run, but so much is his power that I feel like he didn't adapt, but he tried to pull the rest of the game into adapting to his game. Yeah. And we've heard these winners be described at times, especially with like the, you know, bag search as Rob zombies. So in a way he adapted the game and molded it at times to being like Redemption Island. He was like, I'm like an immovable statue. I'm not going to change myself, but you guys change for me. And at times they did, which is crazy.
It couldn't agree more. I think that's perfectly put. My jaw was on the ground during the tribal council when they all emptied their bags. And I absolutely agree. It's a credit to Rob. Even the fact that those four people were voting him out tonight and still faked it all day and just sat there quietly, I think is a credit to Rob. Like, they were all scared to tell him. It's like, let's just be quiet and do what Rob tells us until he leaves. And then it's like the teacher left the classroom and we can all party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they're still scared of him. They know they're voting him out. They're still scared of him.
Yeah. I wonder if Ben and Adam were close at all to voting that way. Because as I said, I think there was merit, but I get it either side, and I pray for one of them next week. But I want to move on to Sele. Let's talk about X on the beach. I love this dynamic. Yeah, it's so fun. Wendell and Michelle, who have exposed their whole dating history, their personal life. It's so awkward. Like, it gave me, like, secondhand cringe factor.
No, I love it, but it's so funny because it's like they're exes. And so you're like, okay, who am I mad at this? And it's like, no one. I just love them both more because of this and how awkward it is. When Michelle said, new season, who dis? I lost it.
The whole scene was so good. It was so, so good. Just so entertaining. When it's like, who would have thought we'd be on a deserted island? It's like, well, you did when you signed up to the All Winners season that you would both inevitably be on. Yeah. Five Tribe is unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, it's not great. And it's sad because I do think Michelle seems to be like the perfect fit for that Yule Alliance. She's a one-time unconnected new school player. She seems to fit perfectly with the Nicks, the Wendells, the Yules, and the Sophies of the world. So if it actually does bar her strategically, it stops being funny and starts getting a little sad. But for what it was, they seem to be taking it with good humor. I do hope it remains entertaining and not just like, oh, is this, you know, the swap's unfortunate, but is this like a woman's dating history coming back to ruin her game? That would stop being fun.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't go that way for either of them. But you know, I have to admit, I am a bias because I'm a great Wendell supporter. He's a buddy of mine. And I think that I don't see him letting it affect his game. And I've only met Michelle once, but I feel the same way about her. They're both so laid back in reality. That it's going to be interesting. I can still see this working to their advantage in some way. But I'll be honest, I was not expecting it to be as awkward as it was tonight. Yeah. Like, it got really weird. And to have Parvati narrating it.
Oh, agreed.
That and Nick fawning. Like, Nick, someone needs to remind this guy that he's a newlywed. Like, you have a wife, bro. It doesn't matter that she's married. You're married.
Yeah, I think he's just engaged. And was he engaged at the time? You know, no, he definitely, you know, he's talking to his high school crush. You can blame him, but the cringe factor.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck was my high school crush.
You think you'll ever play with her? Will you tell her that she was your crush if you land up on a beach with her?
I have learned from Nick's experience, and I will absolutely not say that. No. No,
yeah, just for the audience, please don't, because I can only handle so much of the awkwardness. But I agree that I loved Parvati narrating it, because something I think has been missing from the edit and what I've been missing from the season is I've been so fascinated by what this Parvati-Michelle relationship could be.
Yeah.
And we've heard behind the scenes it could be pretty vital. It could have been what saved Parvati at the Ethan vote. But I've been so curious about this idea that, like, there are girls out there, so many women who've put down, I want to play like Parvati in their bio, and some of them go on to win. And one of those people who put it in their bio was Michelle. So this mentor Black Widow relationship is something I'm very, very curious about. Having Parvati, who's maybe been there, who's maybe been in the awkward ex-boyfriend with James on the island situation, and having her kind of guide her through it, I think that's so compelling. And I'm really interested to see how these two women team up in this awkward, romantically charged situation and try and get something done, because it doesn't look like they're in a good spot.
Well, those relationships can be, they remind me a lot of Wentworth and Lauren on my season, because Lauren put Wentworth as the person that she wanted to play like, and then met her idol out there and they became these great friends.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you're right. If Michelle and Parvati seem like they have that developing, if they can find their war dog to kind of roll with, if they can turn one of these guys, and maybe they can get Wendell to be their war dog, or Nick for that matter. But they, whereas Sarah and Sophie got so lucky by getting those dysfunctional three, it seems like Parvati and Michelle got really unlucky in getting three guys that have been working in tandem the entire game. Like,
those three are not splitting.
It would be a really surprising to see them turn against each other for this new thing.
Mm.
Nick, Wendell, and Yule. Is that correct? Yeah.
As I said, their closest allies on the old Dakar. Yeah. I do think that, I don't know if it'll happen, and obviously Michelle has already voted against Parvati's group before. So again, we haven't had a great sense of that relationship, but there obviously is a relationship there. But if I were them, I think they're the most swap screwed of any of these tribes. I think that they've got the most immovable group. They've probably got one more tribal council until the merge. If I were them and I lost, I'd be pushing each other under the bus. That's how to survive until the merge. I'm just not sure they will do that, but I don't see them pulling over a third.
No, it's like, and it is interesting since they both have those Yule and Parvati have a relationship, and obviously Michelle and Wendell have a relationship, but as charming as both those two are, and they're so good socially. I'm not thinking of Shawnee right now because of, I've been watching Survivor Australia, but it's like, do you have enough? Do you have enough to get that? And those three other guys are just so smart, and they seem to be working so well together that I agree that they could do it. If anyone can do it, it's probably Parvati and Michelle, but they have the biggest challenge. I totally agree.
Yeah, and I was surprised.
I shouldn't be disagreeing with everything you say, right? I'm such a horrible fishback.
Yeah, we should be fighting more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised by a couple of those relationships because I agreed. I was like, ooh, Yul and Parvati haven't played together since season 13. And even though they didn't play on the same side in that season, you know, she didn't play on the same side as Ozzy in that season. And obviously they went on to be very good allies in season 16 until they weren't. But there was more connective tissue there. And for her to be saying to Yul, what's your wife's name? I was like, oh, you guys have not spoken since the Cook Islands, right, clearly. So there maybe isn't a huge actual out-of-game connection, even if they do know each other from playing together for, you know, several days in the game at that merge. And then I was surprised by Wendell and Michelle. Like, I don't know anything that has happened between them. I have no idea. I'd love the tea. This is the kind of thing a nosy person like me would love to hear about.
Me too.
No, you don't have to say anything. But
no, I don't know anything. I've spent time around the two of them.
Okay.
Since this, and it was just too awkward. I'm like, nope, I'm not asking anything. I'm like too old to ask people about stuff like that.
Give me the tea. Just text me later. I just like badly want to know.
I can't ask. I want to know.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised because when we saw the next time on last episode, and she was like my ex boyfriend, I thought it would have been like very casual and like they'd still be really good friends, and if anything it would help her because it would be a connection, whereas like it was super awkward and she's saying in confessional that he like broke her trust out of the game and he actually hurt her, and I was like, oh, this is a little real. As fun as it was, it does seem a little real, so I'm surprised by that and those connections, because I wouldn't think, looking at those tribes, that Michelle and Parvati should be so segregated from the other three. It would still be a hard position, but it seems like even worse than I would have imagined.
Yeah, I can just say that I definitely expected from the preview for it to be a little more fun than it was.
It was so fun, but it was a lot. Still,
exactly. These two are trying to have as much fun as they can, but clearly the history is, I guess the history might be deeper than what I thought it was. And again, I don't know anything.
You just text me later.
I guess right here.
I want to know. This is so interesting.
I'm texting Bryce Isaiah right now. I'm like, Bryce, I feel awkward asking Wendell. What's up, dude?
Purple Pants podcast is so essential this week. Bryce is going to tell us all about what happened with Michelle and Wendell. The question on everyone's lips today.
Absolutely. Let's all go to Bryce.
Yeah, so that tribe's really interesting. I have extreme concerns for Parvati, especially right before merge. She may have, you know, kind of have a better position because Ro's been voted out, so now they might see her as completely isolated. Michelle actually maybe is a bigger threat. Anyone could come back from, obviously, the Edge of Extinction, which could change things, but Michelle's got so many allies on the other side, and Parvati is kind of on her own island now, having lost a lot of her allies. But right before a swap, with the numbers in your favor, do you let Parvati Shallow get to emerge? I'm not so sure. So, yeah, push each other under the bus, Michelle and Parvati. As much as I don't want to see it, I think that's the move.
Yeah, they got to, because otherwise it's like Michelle, if Parvati doesn't push Michelle under the bus, she can kind of hide how many connections she has, because these guys don't know, but Parvati's going to push her under the bus hard. The question is, will Michelle push Parvati under the bus? I think more so. Or will they just win out? Maybe they won't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, two tribes are going to tribal council next
week.
Oof. Yeah, so it's a very slim, and also all the tribes are so strong in their own ways, because like these are winners who are amazing at the game. So who knows? But to move to Dakal was more. I have so many more concerns. This is interesting because this feels like a very standard 5-person swing vote position where neither of the sides have an idol. You know, obviously Kim being a swing vote has the idol. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, which way do you think that she should go?
I think Kim should swim for a new boat. I think she should ditch the people that she was with and take her amazing throwing during the challenges and eel spearing abilities to her new folks who are already seeming to appreciate her more. I think Denise and Kim is exactly a power couple I want to see. When Kim said, I haven't found anyone who plays the game like me, and just seemed to latch onto Denise, I felt so much like that's why I love David so much, is we just spoke the same language, and it means so much out there that I just don't see Kim if she really feels that with Denise, sticking with Sandra, who speaks the exact opposite language, I feel like, as Kim. So I think Kim's going to go with these new folks. And I think that that's the right move for her. What do you think?
I agree. She's been the one that was like left out. She was in that three with Amber and Tyson. So she was, if anyone was isolated from quite a cohesive decal, it was definitely Kim. And especially like, it seemed like she had obviously more connections with that middle group, maybe a Yul, maybe a Sophie, but especially it being Toadie and Sandra who were like on the opposite side. It does feel like that's so separate from her. And while the logic makes so much theoretical sense, if you're Kim, keep the big threats around because you're a big threat, it does have to come down to like who you feel really comfortable with. And like, while she is a Mount Rushmore type threat, a la, you know, Sandra and Toni and Jeremy to a degree, and definitely Denise are like more of the hyenas in Winners at War, where everyone is a lion, but some have to become hyenas.
I know. Thank you, yeah. Tony, for the Lion King reference. All we need is a meerkat and a war dog.
Yeah, perfect. If only War Dog had won, that would be such a great pun to put into this season. But I think so much of it often comes down to like who do you connect with socially, and what Kim has really been missing from this game, and what's been such a different experience for her, is that she hasn't really connected socially. Where like on her season, everyone liked her and everyone wanted to work with her. So she does her damage when she gets her people, and she just maybe found a person in Denise, someone who plays much more like her. She's an opposite style player to a Toni and a Sandra, as much as they have the same stature. And I think she just found someone she could actually connect with and have long-term bonds with that are more than just a marriage of convenience, which being, you know, going with the threat alliance definitely is, but I don't know if that's long-term. I don't know if she'd ever feel comfortable. And I don't think she'd be playing like Kim because she wouldn't have that comfort.
Yeah. And I think it's also good for Denise. I mean, Denise has that Adam relationship, but Kim is a little more steadfast, at least this season, than Adam has been. He's been more erratic. And I even think that Jeremy is a lot better fit for Kim than either.
And they have the poker lines. Aren't they best friends?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Don't they know each other's kids?
And I see a lot of reason why Toni or why Jeremy would want to keep Kim around. Like I think both of those relationships work both ways to a point where if I'm Sandra and Toni, I'm getting a little nervous for sure. But
yeah.
Don't you love this alliance of Toni and Sandra? It's like the alliance that I probably least expected.
Yeah.
And they're just thick as thieves, and I love it.
Yeah, well, I had seen Toni say in the pre-season that he and Sandra were close having gone on the pre-jury trip for Game Changers together.
Oh, okay.
So they had, you know, had made that connection. And it is crazy to see it. It's kind of like how we take for granted that we just watch Parvati and Rob run the game, or at least run their alliance. And they were so close, and he's telling her about his fire tokens. He just gave her his fire tokens. And we take for granted that 6 weeks ago, tell me that Rob and Parvati are the ones who are super connected. And that would make me fall off my chair. I would have expected Toni and Sandra a little bit more because of the pre-jury trip, but some of the connections that we've seen and how close they are crazy. And we just accept it as part of this like new reality we're all in.
And I really wondered how, and this is credit to the show, like how are they going to handle these outside relationships? Are they going to act like they didn't even exist? And then we're all going to be blowing up social media. And they've really, I think, tried hard. What's that?
That's what Australian Survivor would do. They don't just pretend these relationships don't exist, and we know that they do.
Oh, really? So I think they've done a great job of showing us as well as they can. Like, this is the background. Like, when they actually showed us the poker footage, I was like, whoa, blown away. And tonight they kind of did another thing of listening, something they talked about in the game, and then they showed us. And I know we're going to talk about Yul and his relationship from his original season later. But I've really loved the way that they've handled a few of those things this season.
I love the reverence that the season has had for its own history. And even just talking about Boss Rob's buddy strategy and bringing in, and even Sophie saying it was two opposing tribes. And like, we have all this information as super fans, but for the casuals to just kind of get those crib notes on what we're watching and the history of these players, I think has been amazing. And I would be very disappointed if they hadn't done that, because this season is the culmination of something of 20 years of 40 seasons, most of which are represented here. And I love the fact that they're talking about it out of the game, in the game, completely paying reverence to the culture of the show and the history of the show. And if season 40 wasn't doing that, it would be a complete misstep.
Yeah. They're nailing it. I think they've done a really nice job with that.
As you said, I do want to talk about a very poignant moment of that history. I just, you know, before we move on from Decal, Who is going next week? I have so much concern for Tony if they go to Tribal. I do think that they're probably a weaker tribe sight unseen. And Sandra is obviously kind of like a challenge liability, but Tony is someone who you have him where you want him. You have the numbers pre-merge. I don't know if I would be blindsiding Tony to take out a Sandra and leaving him in the game, although I don't know if I'd want to do that to Sandra either because they're both so dangerous. But I'm so concerned for Pavi and Tony next week. And like, how am I going to get through the next 7 days?
It's going to be stressful for you, Shannon. It's going to be a stressful 7 days because I think you're right. I think they're both in a lot of trouble. Although I think Sandra might be in a lot of trouble too. Like, I can see that going either way. And I can almost...
They need to throw each other.
Who do you think Tim would push to get rid of? Because I can see Jeremy and Denise leaving it in Kim's hands, and I can almost see Kim saying, let's get rid of Sandra.
Yeah, I mean, we've now, like, taken it as a fait accompli that she would flip. I don't think, like, you couldn't begrudge her for flipping. Like, she's clearly been on the bottom. I think we both agree that that would be the move for her. So, yeah, who would – I feel like Tony has felt, at least from the secret scenes, has seemed so socially integrated, and I know that's not a reason to keep Tony Blackos in the game because he is Tony. He is up against Sandra, so these are crazy decisions that they would have to make. I really don't want that tribe to go to Tribal Council. Those five are just legendary. But yeah, I think from a social perspective, maybe a Sandra, but from just the fact that, like, Tony Blackos has never been left out of a vote to stay in the game. He had complete control of every single vote in Kageyan, and then he went out in Game Changers and he was gone. So I don't know what it looks like when Tony maybe his blindsided, they take out Sandra, he gets to emerge, he's saved at that point. He would be, like, completely frenetic. He would be searching for every advantage in the game.
Yeah.
He would be like a Tony bomb about to go off. So I'd be scared to leave that in the game, but I'd be scared to leave Sandra in the game. We've seen her allies. Yeah. We've actually seen her allies be taken out and her live to tell the tale. And from what I can take from that, she throws out the fish and then she wins. So
yeah, and which is the bigger shield? You know, it's like, obviously Tony's a bigger challenge threat post merge. They're both big shields in weird ways. Yeah, well, I he participates more challenge. In challenges, but
and neither of them are that big a challenge.
Right. So I agree. You definitely don't expect to see Sandra running around digging for idols, maybe. But man,
she has found one, but so nothing.
Yeah, just in every single way.
Yeah.
And then do you take into account, man, Sandra's got a lot of people over on the edge of extinction now. Theoretically.
Yeah, do you take into account? They both have similar connections, obviously, from Dakal.
Yeah.
Sandra might be more well integrated across the board. Is she going to get back to, like, a Poverty, for example, who she's played with? So,
and what do you perceive? Like, do you still think she's friends with Rob if you weren't on her tribe?
I don't envy the position if they have to go to Tribal Council of Kim and Jeremy and Denise sitting there and basically writing out the resumes of these two players to see who is more dangerous between Tony and Sandra. Who do we have our pick at? You also might be more scared that someone like Tony does have something in his bag of tricks. You might not want to take the shot at him if you don't have the numbers to split a vote. So that might be another thing for Sandra.
Yeah.
I could see it go either way. I'm very worried.
Unicorn and the queen. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So poetic. You and your meerkats and your war dogs, the unicorn and the queen. This is just story time.
You know. I'm inspired by this Shakespeare cat right here. not a great visual for podcast listeners, but for the
there is a Shakespeare cat. That's all they need to know. All right. Well, we wanted to talk about this very poignant moment of what Yule is doing, and we knew in the preseason that he's going to give the money if he wins, which fingers crossed, to Jonathan and his wife, Stacey, Jonathan Penner, and to ALS Research, and asked the show to match it. And the show finally got into it tonight. And I'm so glad I saw the scene last night so I could cry then because my makeup, but also then the ad came up with Jonathan and Stacey. And then I also cried and I was like, my makeup, but also this is so, so sad, so powerful. And I just love so much when the community rallies together. I love that it's based on this connection we watch between Yule and Penner. And I just hope, so I'm going straight after this podcast to donate. And I just hope everyone is giving what they can and raising awareness and rallying behind the Penner Tidal family, because it's so tragic and they're one of our own and we just need to, like, envelop them at this point.
And it's so great. And I mean, everyone knows Jonathan Penner. He's such a legend in the game. And he's so, I think what I love most about him is just how funny he is. And just for him to be able to keep his spirit like through something like this, and I followed it. Like, I've seen the videos that he and his wife, who's a very talented filmmaker, have released, and it's so gut wrenching. But from a perspective of just watching the season, obviously anything we can do for Jonathan. And I love that Yul's playing for Jonathan. Like, all that stuff is amazing. I think we should all look into ALS. I think as Survivor fans, we owe it to Jonathan to learn what we can so that we can figure out how we can help. But trying to put that aside for even a second, it was kind of, as much as I was getting emotional, rewarding to see this game bot, Yul, really break down even talking about his friend and what he's going through. And I saw a video on Instagram of Penner playing with Yul's kids. And it's just like, you can tell this is a genuine friend. And it was really neat to see that other side of Yul, because he's so good at keeping it together out there.
Yul is like such a gift to the season and to the Survivor community. Like, we never thought we were getting Yul back on Survivor, and to have him back dominating, I think, more than anyone this season. Maybe that's a big call, but I think a lot of people would agree. And to be playing for this reason, for something that, I mean, if he were to come on and say, I'm playing for a family member, a friend who has ALS, that would be touching and heartbreaking in and of itself. But the fact that connecting it to season 40, the fact that it is a Survivor connection, and it's something, a relationship we watch form on the beach, often it was a checkered relationship, but as he said in his interview with Mike Bloom, it got a lot better after the show, and he realized, you know, all of the things that they love about each other and have in common. So we have connection to that relationship, and watching it, we definitely feel that. Jonathan Penner is a very big member of the Survivor community, someone who's been on podcasts, someone who's so present, and who is so beloved, I think, as well. So it's so powerful for season 40. I'm so glad that they didn't reduce it to a secret scene, that they put it in the show, that they really did put it on primetime and got that awareness out there. And it's just such another powerful moment from the season, and maybe one that actually can barely be topped, but that's a high bar because there's so much going on. But it's beautiful, and it's sad, and I'm sad. And,
and they didn't need to take it to the next level of sending a crew to Penner and finding out how you can help and do all that, but it's absolutely the right thing to do, and I'm glad that they did it. And it really I mean, it just drove the point home. It just made everything that much more powerful. It was a really emotional week on Survivor in Australia here, and then now here in the U.S. But in such a positive way. I think when you get emotional on Survivor, it's never contrived. It's always like, I mean, this is why the show's so great. Is it's real human moments and real people, and they just did a great job with it.
So. Yeah, and just not to spoil anything from Australian Survivor, but we've had our own connection, with what happened this week, and that person's mother was suffering from MND, which is a form of ALS. So it really is such a, you know, obviously a global problem, a community problem, a global community problem. And I really do hope that we as a Survivor community rally behind the Penners, and in Australia, that's certainly what we're doing with the tragedy that we've had this week in the Survivor community as well. So we're going to rally, and I just hope that everyone does what they can, gives what they can, shares it, spreads it, remembers it, doesn't forget it, because it's hard. You know, you're crying at that scene, you're crying at Penner, and then the next scene, you know, I'm there was an ad break, but I'm laughing at the Wendell, you know, Michelle situation. Right. This is such a roller coaster. It was the same last week. I'm crying at the Ethan stuff on Edge of Extinction, and then I'm laughing at Tyson being hilarious. Like, it really is a roller coaster, but it's something that we have to not forget in the craziness of the season, and really to stick with, stay present with every week, and continue to raise awareness about it, and continue to really think about. Scott, do we have questions? Okay. Oh, I'm doing it. I can't read that. Okay, I can now. Okay, at Shannon Gates, at Rick Devins, did the edit go out of their way to make a non-Rob boot a possibility? Sarah and Sophie must have had a lot of confidence to not even use one advantage in that spot. That's from Faison on Twitter.
I kind of alluded to it earlier, but when Rob is in that one confessional and he's talking and he's saying, we're keeping everyone in camp, this is the whole thing. To me, if he's alone talking, then that means that there are four people back at camp, probably. Maybe there's only three back at camp. You'll do two confessionals at a time. But probably at some point during the day, people had a chance to talk without him. Even if he had to, I mean, did he not use the bathroom at all day? It doesn't take long for Ben and Adam, especially if they're doing it together, but for either one of them to just be like, we're getting rid of Rob. We have to do this. Sorry. But I think that's probably what happened.
I mean, if it was an editing thing, like, I was a little bit, not that I thought he, like, I thought Rob was going, I just didn't know if it would necessitate an idol or an advantage. But I probably thought they were going to vote out Rob, but I thought there was a good chance that they did stick with Rob because, as I've said, I could see some logical sense to it. I could see wanting to assure yourself the merge to getting back, at least for Ben, to some other numbers. Adam has no one, but Adam really needs to make some friends. We definitely did something good right here. Ben might have doomed himself next week when he'd have a pretty merge sitting for him if he had stuck with Rob. But clearly, like, Sophie and Sarah did seem at times at least a little bit worried. They, you know, had the conversation. They talked about their options. They obviously had a great, great read not to. And, you know, as much as you can say that they knew what was going on, no one knows. No matter what anyone's telling you, they could be lying to you. So it's all on their read. I don't know. I would love to speak to Adam and Ben after the season and hear, like, was it ever a chance? Because it could have made sense, but it also made a lot of sense to take out Boston.
Totally agree, though. It's like when you talk about the edit, it's like maybe they didn't show us Adam and Ben saying, yeah, we're going to vote with you. But even then, why do Sarah and Sophie, you know, it has nothing to do with that. You got to figure out a lot of stuff. So I don't think they made it interesting like they always do. I appreciate that.
I mean, there's no way that Sarah and Sophie could have been 100% confident. You just really do never know, especially playing with these winners. So yeah, they rolled the dice and they correctly rolled it and their read was great. And before we get to the next question, I wanted to ask you, I'll Stephen Fish back then, like, who is getting the fishy?
Oh man, I didn't even think about that. While I think about that, I have a question that I needed to ask you, though, which is similar. It's who has their bum in butter?
This is a saying I used for the post-swap of Australian Survivor. I said someone had landed with their bum in the butter, and I found out after that is like a South African saying, actually derived from Dutch to Afrikaans to, you know, just South African English, that my parents say all the time, and people were very confused. Who's landed with their bum in the butter? I mean, Nick and Yule being in that majority and not even having an ex-girlfriend on that tribe, that's pretty... And Kim going from the bottom to a swing vote position with her whole idol in her pocket, her bum's in the butter.
Yeah, and catching an eel and stepping up and throwing the things during the challenges and knocking the blocks off. So Kim definitely with at least an honorable mention for the fishy. But I want to give the fishy to someone who was at tribal council. So I'm gonna fishy Sophie.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Sarah also had the great read not to use her advantage.
Exactly, the other one.
How fun is that?
I love it.
I don't think Sophie ever found an idol in her season, so it's been interesting to see her and Denise and people who never found idols on their original season find idols in a group of people who have found a lot of idols, and I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, I was really hoping it would just be the idol finders finding idols. My odds keep going down for returning season having success if all these people are finding idols, but that's okay.
Yeah, Sophie for the fishy, I agree. We have a Twitter question from someone whose name is Emoji, so I don't know. How crazy is it that no winner from the season 30s has been voted out yet? Is it time to acknowledge the existence of a new era advantage?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's just... the sample size is too small. It's just the old school, the way these particular players came out of the gate, they rubbed some people the wrong way and it just didn't work out for them. You know, Danny, I don't think we still have the whole story there, but kind of got what we saw was erratic and it just fell apart. But I don't think that means if you brought the same number of people from Eras back next season, it would go the same way.
Yeah, I mean, Natalie's 29, so we're right on the edge of, forgive the pun, but we're right on the edge of the 30 being voted out. I think there was some of this here, like I would only say for maybe like an Amber who felt like outpaced by the game and maybe like a Danny who felt a little outpaced by the game. There's a lot of issues to being old school for more than just the fact that there's a new era advantage. It's also like there's more new school people. So if they're going to team up, there's just greater numbers that way. And also they might just know each other better or have those connections or, you know, they've all played around the same time. Are they in the same social circles? Have they dated? There's a lot of probably advantages to being new school in this season, but I don't know if it's like just the fact that they are new school. I think it's also like external circumstances. But I would say Amber, if anyone has fallen to that, it's been Amber. Boston Rob, I don't think fell to that. Boston Rob is just, he's climbing a mountain when he plays. It's climbing a statue to be Boston Rob and come back and play Survivor.
he was going full steam just every step of the way, and you burn out too early that way. But he had to. He was just forced into it.
Yeah, and as we said, it wasn't even an advantage or an idol that took him out or anything like that. He's played with swaps. He's played with all of this. It was a Boston Rob social strategy connection, you know, all of you sit together and vote out someone else. That was the Boston Rob game that he was voted out by, and a swap. So I don't see it as like a hyper new school, old school thing.
Yeah. Well, I got one for you, Shannon.
Okay. Well, just throwing in the questions.
Yeah. At Sarah Lucina should have totally played that steal a vote, right? This is from Queen Parvati. She put her faith in Adam and Ben gifting them a 2-2 split, in my opinion. Play it and be safe. What do you think, Shannon? Would you have played it just to be safe? We talked about how it's more valuable there than it could be down the line.
I do think for Sarah, as much as I've sung the praises of a vote steal more than I ever have on this podcast, I do think likely chance, I would put money that this advantage is not helpful to Sarah in the future. Like, she probably could have just played it here, but she's someone who thinks that the vote steal is necessary. She still seems to think that it was what got Michaela out in her season, even though, as we've said, that's not true. So you can see holding on to an advantage. It might be helpful. It could still be. It's still an advantage. It's not an extra vote. It is a vote steal. And I cannot criticize people for having the perfect read. You know, this wasn't like if, for example, she hadn't played it and they had won the vote, but not in a way she expected, then you'd be like, well, you were blindsided and you just got lucky and you should have played it. But considering exactly what she thought would happen, she read those people correctly and she was right. I will never criticize the read.
Absolutely. All credit to her. But I always watch and just think, like, I would much rather waste an idol than go home with an idol in my pocket. Like, just no doubt. Like, it would hang over my head forever. And I look at the steal vote as less powerful than an idol. So I probably would not have shown the intestinal fortitude that Sarah showed. I probably would have played it and just gone, whatever. It's probably not going to be that powerful down the road. I'm not going home with it in my pocket. But good for her. I mean, obviously, I hope that we're both proven wrong and down the road it pays dividends in some way. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, definitely an argument to play it either way. But, you know, they did that well. They were playing that well where they could get the votes, obviously, in a good situation, but get the votes and read it well. But I wouldn't have been mad at it had she played it. But I'm even more impressed that she didn't need to and read it correctly and does still have that in her pocket. She used a whole fire token for it. So, like, you know, you do want it to have some value. And she thinks it's valuable. Like, we're the ones who are like, who cares? Yeah. But she, like, and it might be valuable. So
and we'll see. And Sophie have their toys. If they get a few more people in there, they could have a David versus Goliath thing going where they got all the different advantages and toys all stirred up into one pot.
Yeah, that too is in a very, very good spot with the numbers on that tribe and an idol and a vote steal. Yeah. And they're just absolutely killing it. Mark Levy asks, hey, Adric Devin.
Mark, what's her guy?
Who is more powerful with their 4 fire tokens, Natalie or Parv?
Interestingly enough, I would say even though she's not in the game, Natalie is more powerful because Natalie has 4 fire tokens and she's given a bunch of stuff to people in the game. And she has Sandra owing her and she has Jeremy owing her. So whereas Parv is in a really bad spot in the game. And if she's voted out, she has to give all of her fire tokens away and start over again on the edge of extinction.
Yeah, and Natalie, it seems, will have frequent opportunities maybe next week to get more fire tokens. I back her to get those fire tokens because been so great at it, whereas, like, no one is going to give. I mean, maybe Michelle, if she gets voted out, actually would give her fire token to Parvati if she goes next week. So maybe Jeremy. There's potential for either of them to get it. I need to see the menu for what people in the game can buy. Like, can they buy advantages and stuff? Because I don't remember. It was a very long time ago. I feel like I'm very tapped into the edges menu. And I know what Natalie can buy. She can buy advantages. She can buy idols. She can buy all of that. What can Parvati buy?
I don't think they can buy anything off a menu. I think they can only buy, at this point, I think they can only buy stuff that is offered to them. Like, right. If no one on the edge is willing to sell you anything, you can't buy anything yet.
So the game isn't offering them, because I know that you could buy like a top and stuff like that, right? Like, the game is offering them.
I thought that was
them.
On the edge.
No, the edge was like
on the edge, could you buy like the pizza and the, okay. I might not be remembering correctly then.
we're trying to like analyze two different menus. There definitely was a menu at camp. I don't know what was on the menu, but I'm pretty sure TARP was on the menu and like some other team advantages, because there was definitely the conversation about like, should people pool their advantages, was obviously, I mean, their fire tokens for a reward, which obviously no one is going to do. But if you can buy an idol, like, this is the time to do it, Bobby, like, buy your idol right now. But yeah, I think it'll come down to, are people sending her that opportunity? And like, there's a lot of potential there. That's why she has so many fire tokens. Ethan could definitely be sending her an idol to, that she needs to pay for. Rob could, Amber could, Danny is definitely not. That one's bad. But Tyson could, like, you know, any of them could. So, yeah, she has a good chance next week. That might save her to possibly buy an idol on advantage that could get her out of a tricky situation. You know what she needs? A vote steal.
Yeah.
Powerful. Yeah.
And she doesn't need a tarp because she has Wendell now.
Yes.
And Wendell will fix up that camp. Do you think, I think in future Survivors, you know how they used to have, like, people who lived in the area, like islanders, would come over for a day and like teach them how to fish and fix up the camp.
Yeah.
I think Wendell should be a reward one season. Like Wendell just comes to your camp for a day and fixes everything up and kicks it with you.
Yeah, and hopefully you have no romantic history with him, which would just be a bonus.
Well, I have a little bit of romantic history with him, but I'm proud of that. Way out of my league, just like Becca.
All right. Marietta says, with the next episode having two tribe vote outs, who do you think is in the most trouble in each tribe? We've kind of discussed this, but how are we going to have enough time for three tribes, two tribal councils, and EOE? The answer to the second part is we don't have enough time. Pray for the edit. Do you want to give picks for all three tribes? Who we think is going home?
Like everyone, I wish we had more time. That is tough.
Come to Australia.
I think
we've got nothing but time.
You know, I'm watching Australia. And I wish you guys spread it out during the week. It's all front loaded. And then I feel like I'm waiting forever.
It's a lot.
Sorry, we're going off topic here. Team David. And so I would say my people in the bottom of every tribe would be Parvati.
Yeah.
Probably in the most trouble. Tony or Sandra, we talked about. I'm going to say Sandra because I just think Kim likes Tony more. And then, that's saying that Kim's going to go over. And then the other tribe, I'm already even. Adam. I think Adam's in more trouble.
I'll go Ben because Adam's less connected. So, like, if they're smart, they probably will get rid of Ben. Like, Adam is really, truly a number for them in a way that Ben probably isn't at Emerge.
I think they can control Ben better than they can to control Adam would be.
They're both really hard players to control. Like, they're both chaotic players. I wouldn't feel good about it either way. I'll just go Ben for the sake of the fact that we're meant to be disagreeing more than we are. And I guess for that sake, I'll also go Tony. Also, I'm a pessimist. Also, I'm so worried and I'm so scared. So I'll just go with Tony to put it out into the universe so that it hopefully doesn't happen. But I agree, Parvati would be on the bottom for me. For her tribe.
Thanks, Marietta.
Yeah, I think maybe that's all that we got. Scott, do we have plugs? For the shows, nothing's coming up, so I'll just guess. Oh no, we got it. All right, live from North Hollywood. The reason Rick and I are here is because Rob is hosting a live know-it-alls with a bunch of former alumni to talk about this episode in a couple of hours, and that'll be really fun. I'm sure that'll be on video for everyone to check out. If you aren't there, we're so jealous. The Bachelor 24 finale recap. I have fallen away from the season, but I watched the finale in scrolling through live tweets, and it was a lot, and it was so entertaining.
Lucky is my Bachelor, sorry.
fair enough. Yeah, it's been a big Bachelor week for everyone in the community, but this was really entertaining. So Amy and Haley, and I think Gabby Pascuzzi I saw are going to be doing the finale recap of that, so I recommend that. News AF, Tyson's on the edge, but he's also on News AF with Danny and Rob. They'll be doing some stuff. I feel like I'm nailing this.
I honestly think that you're absolutely crushing it.
I'm doing so well. Rob is not getting the feedback. You will see me here next week live ET after the episode. I am now the host of Survivor Know It All. I'm not giving it up. BB Can 8, Thursday morning update with Taryn and I don't know who. I've already fallen. I'm so sorry. Anyway.
Nope, I'm nailing it.
Watch that. Survivor 40 power rankings with Matt Ligori with your Edge of Extinction.
I can take this.
Yes, Rick, yeah, go on.
Wild Vic and Gavin Whitson. And I got to tell you, these two are two of the very funniest people you'll hear. So definitely anything you can get, whether it's in writing or whether they're talking, the dry wit coming out of Gavin Whitson and just the cutting Victoria, Wild Victoria. Those are two of my favorite people. Check them out.
The wit, and we've got to have a pun for Victoria, but it's a victory to read that for her. Mm. Taryn's update with Matt Hoffman this week will be going play by play through this crazy episode. Will they be dissecting what happened with Michelle and Wendell? Who is giving us the tea? We need to know. So watch that. There's video for that. BB Can 8. There's a lot of BB Can 8. Thursday eviction recap. I don't know who's on that either. Sorry.
I think Arissa Koch is actually hosting that. Oh, no, that's a lie. Okay, my fault.
She's hosting BB Can 8, but I don't know who's hosting. I mean, Taryn will be on the recap.
The podcast.
You know, we're not going to give people wrong information. Just check it out.
Sorry.
Okay, so, I didn't even know this. The Winners at War recap is with Vesepia, a winner who is not at war at the moment, but whose insights are greatly appreciated. We had a Marquesas shout out, and it's on the episode where her former ally, Boston Rob, got voted out. Can't miss that.
Very nice, very nice.
Oh, and the B&B is with Ali Lasher, which will be hilarious. I'm sure that'll be so much good stuff there with Mike and Liana. Those are three of my absolute favorite podcasters, so go check it out.
I hope you are nicer to the contestants on season 40 than you were to me when I played. You were very
mean.
Isn't
she best friends with your wife, though?
She is now. My wife was pretty upset with her when she was saying mean things about me, even though we had never spoken at all in real life. She thought I was awful.
The internet is, the internet.
Thanks, Ali.
Why Boston Rob lost. David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis are going to be telling us why, how the Godfather gone from our screens, but not really, because he's on edge of extinction. Survivor 40 feedback for episode 5 with Lisa. It's a great week. What a lineup.
That's going to be hilarious.
I also want to say, my favorite thing about the plugs usually on Know It Alls is how surprised Rob seems to be about each show. Not the ones he's giving, but it seems like he really doesn't know the schedule, and Scott just brings it up and he's like, wow. And I feel like I'm really channeling that, and I'm also surprised, and I'm bringing a real Rob energy to this.
Absolutely. And you guys are both so enthusiastic about it. I love it.
This will be great. The Wiggle Room with birthday boy Josh Wiggler. Get your wand offs in, everyone. How many Wandoffs are we going to be getting about Michelle and Wendell? If I were going to throw my hat back in the ring, I'd be doing some summer loving. Had me a blast,
You got to have one Kiwi reference in there. did you see that Josh eats Kiwis, the skin and everything?
I saw it, but I didn't watch the video.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Wow. Twist this week with the great Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz. She is just such a great voice in the community. What a lineup. What a lineup this week. Go to watch all these podcasts and sign up to be a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. It's the best decision you'll ever make. The best decision I ever made. The community is wonderful. And maybe we'll get the tea on Michelle and Wendell, because there's always conversations. Can we figure it out together? Probably not. We can't offer you behind the scenes intel on people's relationships, but we can offer you friendship and conversation and extra content, rap swag, and watch its community, patron only shows. I mean, what are you doing if you're not a patron?
You know who we didn't see much of tonight that might have some intel on this whole Wendell Michelle thing is Wendell's toothpick.
you think they shared the toothpick?
Went out the door pretty quick tonight when Wendell started getting confessionals. So I'm wondering what's going on there, if there's something where they can't show them both at the same time. But I bet Wendell's toothpick could give us some input.
Know that I'm now picturing Wendell and Michelle sharing the toothpick, Lady and the Tramp style. So you put that image into my mind.
Wow. Let's throw Harry's toothpick in there too, just to really...
Nick's got a toothpick. Ben's had a toothpick. As we've said, winning Survivor is just cognizant, or it's just predicated on having a toothpick. And I'm just surprised that this isn't Survivor toothpicks. We need
more
toothpicks.
Did JT start this whole thing? Was JT the one who put a piece of hay in his mouth?
That sounds right.
Oh, if only Stephen Fishback was here.
You tell me, Rick Steven.
Rick Evans is just no Fishback. That's for sure.
Well, we gave a fishy. We talked through everything. There's going to be a live Know It Alls coming soon, but I hope this is kind of whet the appetite for everyone until then, and hope everyone enjoyed. Obviously, no Survivor Global this week because I'm here doing this, Rob.
We should say that definitely not an official fishy.
No, it's a fishy.
Even Fishback might have his own. I don't know if I want to fight this, but I'll leave it to you. You're the new.
No, it's official. You're okay. Steven for tonight. I gave Fishy when I was Steven last season, and I assume they're official. Official spelled with fish, obviously. that's the hashtag. Rob doesn't usually do it, but I got to say, like, Shakespeare Cat was a good one. Lady and the Tramp Toothpick, just tweet at us. Follow me at Shannon Gates. Follow Rick. Rick, what's your handle?
Rick underscore Devons.
Yes. Okay. Follow us. Follow Rob.
Yeah.
Follow Steven. Keep enjoying this amazing season. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you, Rick, for being the Steven to my Rob.
Thank you, Shannon, for being the Rob to my Steven. And like one of my best Australian friends. It's like you and Matt Simmons and some Survivor Australia folks that I've talked to on Twitter.
I think I'm number one. Like, one of was pretty insulting. I think I'm number one.
I've met Matt in person, but I've interacted with you a lot more, so it's real close.
We'll talk about this offline. Just when you send me the text. Yeah, when you send me the text about Michelle and Wendell, you just confirm and I'm number one. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. The season is amazing. It is our privilege to talk about Survivor Winners at War. Go donate. Go to the link. Help out the Pettitidal family. Yeah. Thank you to you all for bringing that to our attention. And that's all I got. So Rob, we'll see you next week. Survivor, bye.